two coordinators out today for the Commanders. Joe Witt, a technicality, formality, just some paperwork drying at that point. We knew that was coming down the pike for months. But the big story is that Cliff Kingsbury is no longer the OC after 2 years here in Washington. Let's go to the Rude Guest Hotline. Rude, the most reliable heating and air conditioning products in the DMV, and talk to our buddy John Keim of ESPN.com. John, obviously over the last several days, this became increasingly likely. It looked like a divorce was possible. But let's go back even before that. Like, if I would have said this was going to happen 2 weeks ago, how surprised would you have been?
I would have been surprised just because we know that the issues this year were not, I mean, were injuries on offense. Like, you can't lose your quarterback for as much as you lost him, and then your top receiver, and then two of your top three receivers for as much time as they missed them, and that, and your starting running back, and have a similar kind of offense. So, you know, I think people understood that. Like, when you talk to people outside of here, and like, would Kingsbury be considered for head coaching jobs elsewhere? Like, the word was like, yeah, he might be on some lists, because I don't think teams are going to hold that against him. So, you know, you don't look at him as like, oh, he was the issue. But there were sometimes like some subtle things that you wondered about, right? Like, you know, Jayden Daniels getting hurt multiple times. Now, you can't just pin that on play calling. But this offense does allow for the quarterbacks to run a lot. Was that a factor? But then you'd hear like Quinn would kind of slip in there a little bit once in a while about wanting to run the ball more to help the defense. And sometimes it was kind of couched a little bit. Like when Ron Revere was here, it was more overt, like, got to run the ball more. And then the next week, Scott Turner would run the ball more. It wasn't quite like that, but it was a little bit more like that. You saw that evolution of it, right? But, you know, there was, so from that standpoint, I'm like, well, if that's what they want, then I could see that, but I still would have been surprised because, again, it wasn't the issue. You know that, like, listen, man, when you talk to the offensive players, they like this offense. They like playing for Kingsbury. There's a lot that they like about him. So, like, from that standpoint, too, and not to ramble on, but, Grant, you know, you've been around when the situation is really bad here, and when there's, like, a side of the ball where it's really bad and they're going to fire somebody, typically you're going to hear a lot of bad things about that coach or what – you know, whether it's whether it's like their play calling, you know, how the way they run the practices, no collaboration, it's whatever it is, like, you're going to hear some of that. You didn't hear that this time.
When did this go south? When was the first schism?
I don't know if there was like a line of demarcation. I don't know that, right? I don't know, like, well, it was this game that did it. I think it was just, it's, to me, it sounds like over time a general fundamental philosophical difference. But I don't know, Danny, if there's like a, oh, it was after the Dallas game when he said this. And I think, I know there were some disagreements, but I don't know if there was like one, you know, and there may, you know, you hear some things, but I don't have it like enough to say if like it was this or that. But I do think it's like a fundamental difference in how they saw the future of the offense going, what they believed needed to be done. So that's how I would look at it now.
John Keim, ESPN on Grant and Danny. What's your reaction to this? This is something Danny and I have struggled with today. You hired Cliff Kingsbury.
Yeah.
Cliff Kingsbury came here.
Yeah.
Seems like some of their frustrations are with Cliff Kingsbury doing things that Cliff Kingsbury does.
Yeah.
Like, what am I missing?
I don't know. That's the number one thing that, if we had a press conference today with Dan Quinn, that's the first thing that'd be asked. Like, this is who he was when you hired him. So what happened? And the other part of that, Grant, too, is when they hired him and there was this line of succession plan, right? Like that, you know, it was a big thing that one of the things that Quinn talked about was having that, because in Atlanta, I don't think it always went the way he wanted. And the staff was supposed to provide that. And now it may be that you're going outside that. So there's a couple of things that, you know, that surprised me and all that. But the number one thing is, like you said, this is who he was. It wasn't like he got in here and changed it. But it just also may be that when you start to see some of the injuries pile up, not that the offense was responsible for that, but is there another way that you could play that would have been more effective? And in case that happens again, do you know what I mean? So it could have just been an evolution of like, you know, I thought this was for me and now it isn't.
John, anything to the idea, and I've seen a few folks speculate to this, and that's all it is. It's the usual online sort of crew, but that Cliff might have been out of here anyway, and this is more his decision because he wants to go get a head coaching job or sort of feels like things may be intractable. We sort of haven't considered the Cliff angle of this, that he might see pastures greener elsewhere. Your thoughts there?
Well, I think they termed it as a mutual parting of the ways. So I do think that that is a part of it for sure. That, you know, and if you think that, here's the other thing, like if you know that this your boss wants you to go in a different direction that you don't want to go, and you know, first of all, and you're still making a lot of money from a team that fired you a few years ago, you have the freedom to say that's not what I want to do. You know what I mean? Like, you know, I think most of us have to stick around and say, all right, I guess I'll have to do it. But he doesn't have to. And it certainly sounds like he wants to explore other opportunities as a head coach. And you know, I think he would have to know, like, if he doesn't get that, I'm sure somebody else would hire him to be in this role. So I think it was as much like it was just starting not. It may have been hard to stick around for another year knowing that this is what the head coach wants and knowing that, well, this is what I do. So I think just that, like I said, that's kind of just the direction he wanted to take. It was just not going to work.
Here's another thing, Cakes, that I have a hard time squaring. I want to get your insight on this. Because where I'm coming from is I don't love Cliff's offense. Like, I think it has limitations. Right. But I think he did a pretty good job. And I think, like, over 2 years, the results are far from fireable, right? So that's kind of where I'm at as a backdrop. But I kind of think about this from the perspective of, to me, Dan Quinn should not be on a hot seat, should not be fired. Anybody saying that a year after the NFC Championship game is crazy. But I wonder why that isn't extended to Cliff as well. Like, outside of Daniels, in my opinion, you can make the case that the second most important person in the building for last year's success was Cliff Kingsbury. And now he's out. Why isn't he afforded that same luxury?
That's a good question, but I would just go back to the difference in the philosophical difference in how you see the offense moving forward.
Right.
So, and if it's not going to work. So the other thing too, there's a couple things here. One, this is a ballsy move by Quinn. So, you know, like, he doesn't have the luxury of, oh, if it doesn't work here, I can get another job somewhere else. Like, this is it for him, almost assuredly, if this doesn't work. So if you have a conviction on something, I think you probably owe it to yourself to make the move, because if you don't and it goes south next year for whatever reason, then you didn't react soon enough, right? And we've seen situations here in the past where the head coach waited too long to make a move and it ended up ruining a side of the ball or the season, right? And we've seen that multiple times. The difference is, I still go back to, it's not as if the players were clamoring for this. They just weren't. So, like, that's one of the differences. But why he's not afforded that, I just think because this is your direct boss, right? And if you both have a different thought on how to proceed with things, it's like, you know what, maybe we just shouldn't be in business together. So, I'm sure if Cliff had said, like, all right, we can do this and this and this to accommodate what you want, then he probably would still be here. That would be my guess. But I do think that, you know, there have been times in the past, again, where I think the head coach has been too slow to make a move in an area where he knows there's probably something, I wouldn't say brewing, because, again, the players liked the system. They liked Kingsbury. But maybe you feel that it's like, this is not going to work. And so, or it's not going to work, whatever it is. And you're slow to make a move. And this time he wasn't.
What does this mean for Daniels? We're not that far removed from he and his mom / representative tweeting pretty positive things about Cliff Kingsbury and some comments from Daniels that were very positive towards Kingsbury. Seems like he's maybe blindsided by this to some degree. Just where does that leave him now entering year three?
So that's a good question. And it's not just Kingsbury, right? You lose Tavita Pritchard, quarterback's coach, right? Now at Stanford. What happens to David Blough, whom he also has a good relationship with? So Daniels had a good relationship with all these coaches. Then you also wonder the effect on Marcus Mariota. He liked Kingsbury's system a lot. Now, he hadn't played in that system until last year, but he really liked it a lot. Now he likes playing here. Would he come back? I'm sure they'd still want him, but would he come back or would he go somewhere else to follow Kingsbury maybe? Who knows? But so the quarterback room could look dramatically different next year for Daniels. The one thing I'll say is that, it's going to be a big change, but I don't necessarily worry about Jaden per se, just because he's been through changes in the past. He went, going from Arizona State to LSU and having to win the job there and then coming here, right? And, I don't think it takes him long to click with people. But I do think that with Kingsbury, he and Jaden had a very similar approach. Like Kingsbury, first coach in the building, get there around 3 a.m. Jaden, first player in the building, getting there around 5:30. They're doing their walkthroughs last year. It would be Jaden, Tavita, and Cliff Kingsbury around 6 a.m. in the bubble, 3 days a week. So I think you had a guy who worked similar to Jaden, both film nerds. He would text Cliff all the time, or he'd text the coaches all the time about different things that he would see on film or in a game. So I think if whoever comes in here, I think you'd want to have somebody who at least works. Most of these guys work really hard, right? But who has a similar approach or style as Kingsbury, because it really worked for Jaden. But I do think that he's a guy who is adaptable as well. And I think he can play in multiple systems. So I don't necessarily worry about that, but it is a change. And I think what you realize early on in this business is that it is a business. And the other part that could help him perhaps is that CJ Stroud, a very good friend of his, went through this last year.
Yeah. Yet another link between the Texans
and
Washington, who have been through pretty similar recent years. John Keim of ESPN.com is with us on Grant and Danny. So you mentioned the difference in vision, which is pretty clear. It sounds like from this meeting where they're talking about what does the offense look like next year and beyond to develop Daniels. So what do you think they want it to look like? If Dan Quinn is butting heads with Kingsbury over his offense, give us an idea of what they might be searching for and who that could be.
That's a good question, because I don't know. I mean, if you want to, I know you've talked about this, and I know Brian Daboll's name is going to be out there, right? But he doesn't necessarily run a run-oriented offense. You know what I mean? His is more probably a little bit more akin to Kingsbury style.
It would feel odd to me. To me, he's like bold Kingsbury light. You know, it's a little more NFL-like, but it's not.
Yeah.
You're not zigging that much from the zag to go with Daboll.
Correct. And now, the other thing is, too, and this is something because I had asked Quinn this the other day about, you always hear from people you get better at what you practice against. And this defense practiced against a unique offense throughout training camp. That was the number one thing they practiced. So then when you go up against a team like the Packers, a lot of motion, a lot, that offense, right? Then you have a lot of issues because you haven't worked against that. You may have practiced, you may have prepared for it, but you haven't worked against it a lot. And so I think if you're a defensive coach, sometimes I would always wonder that, okay, what does Quinn really think about this? Because we watch Seattle, we watch that play action, the way they run their play action game off the run game, and how much it would fool the linebackers, right? So do you want something a little bit more like that, where, is it a little bit more in the center? I know that's been a big topic. I know you talked about it, and I talked to people who are split on that. Some people think it's not that as big a deal. Some people, I'd say more who I don't want to call them old school necessarily, but who like old school football are going to be more under center types. But if you're a defensive guy like Quinn, do you want a little bit more of that? Because he even said yesterday in the press conference, or no, it was last week when asked about that, about Kingsbury's offense, about making sure the runs and the passes marry each other, right, or match up. And when sometimes you're running the play action from the gun or the pistol, it doesn't always look the same, right? So do you want something that's a little bit more, that you can be more up-tempo, but yet maybe have some more old-school elements? And and it's funny because last year we say this and they weren't necessarily a running team last year outside of the quarterbacks, but they did control the clock because the passing game helped do that. Right. So there's more than one way to control the clock and to help your defense. And I also find when you have really good playmakers, that helps too.
There, so, and you touched on this earlier, John, but I want to go back to it. For Quinn and Peters, I mean, I know Peters made a big deal yesterday of saying, no, no, any coaching decision is Dan Quinn's, almost being able to wash his hands of it. But I bet you they, you know, sort of see eye to eye on a lot of stuff. It just sort of seems like they're presenting that united front as, you know, sort of simpatico minds. This is a big deal for Quinn. In other words, like you have some buyer's remorse here on a couple, one of your good buddies that you brought with you from Dallas and your handpicked OC who you pried away from the Raiders, who almost took that job. Yeah. I think you used the word ballsy. That's exactly what this is to me with year three of Daniels. The fact that your handpicked guy didn't work, and it's the, you know, just by being himself, if he'd showed up and just changed type, I'd be more sympathetic, but he didn't. This is Kingsbury, who he always was and who he will be at his next stop. Go into that. What's on the line here for Quinn?
Oh, I mean, it's, I think a lot, and because it has to work. And that's one of the things, like I said, that I would go back to, like ballsy, risky, whatever it is, you know, see what the next chapter brings with it, because like that's always the key, right? Like, so it's like when you let a player go, all right, you traded this guy, you let this guy walk in free agency, what's your plan? Because the plan is always what's going to matter. Like, guys leave and go all the time. This isn't, you know, it's not the first time a guy's been, they've changed coordinators, whatever, but what's your plan? And it better work. So, you know, I would say that, because not just, I mean, it's for his sake, but it's also like you have this special talent at quarterback in Jaden Daniels. You want to maximize that. And they have talked a lot about protecting him. And one way to protect him is not by not having everything be on his shoulders. I think that's some of what's at play here too. So what's at stake for him? I think it's, again, he's not, this is his second chance and is probably his last chance at success as a NFL coach, as an NFL head coach. You have to make it work. And if, in the, you know, this is a roll of the dice. And, you know, I think the last time we saw a big roll of the dice was a couple of years ago. Rivera hires Eric Bieniemy, right? Didn't work out. And it was, you know, there were a lot of other issues there. But this is, yeah, I would, I don't know if I'd equate it to that, but it's a ballsy move. And if it doesn't work, you know, and then it's like, as far as like, you know, his future, well, then it's like, what happens with that? Does Jaden develop or not? Does the offense develop or not? There's still going to be a long way to go with this, for sure. And as Grant, you said, like, Kingsbury's offense was not for everybody. And even people who liked it, they're like, yeah, I don't mind it, but, you know, and there's some people who really like it a lot. So, you know,
it feels like this could work out.
See where the next guy is. Yeah,
it could be an upgrade, but I just am always hesitant when it's pretty good.
Grass ain't always greener.
You know, we'll see. It is a ballsy. I love that. It's bold. This is a huge kickoff to the offseason. They're rolling the dice here.
And I think, too, also, you know, they fired Bobby Johnson, their old line coach. And so there's another one. And
what did that signify to you? That was odd to me.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, that would signify, like, you know, maybe you have an idea of who's coming in. And, you know, like, I think that's kind of what it tells me. But that was a little bit of a surprise. I'd heard that there may be some movement there, and then it happened. So that did surprise me a little bit. But then there were sometimes you talk to other people like, well, you know, was it always clean with what they were doing? But I don't know if it ever is always clean. You know what I mean? So with in terms of run blocking assignments, whatever. But that's like, I'm not an O-line expert. But I forgot my train of thought here, but yeah, it's, you know,
let me let you out on this one more, because we have not mentioned Joe Witt really on the show much at all, and this was a long time coming. But on the DC thing, yesterday you're in the presser, and Quinn says something to the effect of he's keeping an open mind in these exit interviews to the possibility of maybe calling his own plays. There are actually going to be some really high-end coordinating options on defense. Do you think there's a legit chance that they don't bring in one of those big names and that Quinn is actually calling his own plays, as you said, in this huge kind of make or break it year for him?
I would be surprised if he did that, because it really hasn't been what he's wanted to do. And I do think there will be some candidates out there that he has ties to who I think could be pretty good. I know Raheem's going to be mentioned a lot, but Jeff Ulbrich, who was also with him in Atlanta, did a good job as a Jets D coordinator. Still employed by Atlanta, but like once you get someone new in there, he may not be. So, you know, I think that's one certainly that would be worth watching too. But there are other candidates out there you know, the Jim Schwartz, you know, Brian Flores isn't signed yet. Would they want to come work for a defensive-minded head coach that doesn't always – some of those guys are so established they may not want that. So we'll see. But there are some good, strong candidates, and I would be surprised if he stuck with that. It just doesn't seem like that's what he's wanted to do. And the other thing I was going to say on offense, the other thing that's going to help with whatever change that quarter, you know, whatever change with the coordinator, they have to be healthy and they have to add another weapon or two. Like, that's going to help quite a bit as well. And Jaden being healthy, like, any coordinator is going to come in and look pretty good if he's healthy and they add another weapon.
John, appreciate you as always, man, especially on a busy day. Thank you.
Thanks, guys.
Yeah, be good. Go read his work. John Keim, ESPN.com, joining us on Grant and Danny. We can get back into Cliff Kingsbury. We'll continue to gauge your reactions to the news of the day at 800-636-1067. I want to touch on the defensive side of the ball and what Quinn said about possibly calling his own plays and being his own DC next year as soon as we return on The Fan. News of the day, the Commanders moving on from both coordinators. They have fired Joe Witt Jr. They have mutually parted ways with Cliff Kingsbury, who's going to get some head coaching interviews. I wonder if he gets a job. I think it's possible he does. More likely, though, he's an OC somewhere else. I'd be shocked if he doesn't get an OC job in this cycle.
You would think, right? I mean, again, there are enough pelts on the wall. This always happens when a season goes bad. Everybody wants to blame, you know, this coach, and all of a sudden he got stupid or whatever, right? And that happens. That's normal. That's part of the business. But there are enough pelts on the wall. There's enough quarterbacks developed, enough yards achieved, enough, you know, yak, and a bunch of things that are pretty positive for that guy to go without a job for too long.
What a league this is. Yeah. I mean, he was the hottest name on offense a year ago.
And we're doing a little mini parade because I can't believe they were able to keep him. I can't believe it happened.
Outside of Ben Johnson, I don't think there was anybody who had a bigger, hotter glow up offensively in 2024 than Kingsbury. And now, less than a calendar year later, Washington lost 12 games and he's essentially fired. They'll call it something else, but the team wants to move on from him, is happy to move on from him. By the way, he'll be triple dipping in his next job because he'll be still getting paid for one more year by the Cardinals, who fired him years ago. Now he's got 1 year left on this deal with Washington. And then if he gets another gig, a third job, he will then get a third paycheck from that new team. Not a bad gig if you can get it.
Seriously.
For Cliff Kingsbury. Where do I get one of those? Yeah,
in demand enough to get signed to a long-term contract, but, you know, tough enough to work with it. You're not under contract anymore, but you still owe the money.
Real quick on the defensive side, I asked John Keim about this idea of Dan Quinn possibly calling his own plays and being his own defensive coordinator. He was actually asked about that in the press conference yesterday. And this is what Quinn had to say in the presser with the media on the possibility of calling plays. It'll be cut 19 here, Darius. Or, you know, would he go outside the building to hire a DC? He said everything was on the table.
Yeah, it's a good question, Mitch. I think what I've learned is make the best decision for what the team needs. And so as we're going through this, man, a lot to gain through these exit interviews, where we're at. And but that's really where I'm at. I'm not into that space yet. I'm definitely doing this. I'm definitely not. What I do know, that I'll be heavily involved, you know, one way or another, and that's part that I do enjoy. But I think I'll keep an open mind, you know, as I'm going through the next, you know, parts of the process.
I cannot see him calling his own defensive plays. I know he did it this year, and it got better, and he did a nice job, and he's really good at it. So cool, congratulations, sticker on the helmet, whatever, dude. This is such an important year for you, man. You got one last shot at this thing. You really want to multitask? You really want to try to get timeouts right, which you couldn't this year?
Which you couldn't do, exactly.
Challenges right, handle all the stuff you have to on the sideline, and, oh, by the way, call defensive plays when you might be able to get Jonathan Gannon or Jeff Ulbricht would be a great hire. I'd be steamed for, like, Brian Flores, which isn't happening. Like, somebody like that's available. You could go that route, or you could do it yourself. Don't do it yourself. Go get a grown-up. You have a chance. Spend Josh Harris's money on an awesome defensive coordinator.
The point of a guy like Dan Quinn isn't to, you know, power grab like Rivera or, you know, a guy with, I can't have someone with more authority than me in the building. The point of him is this relationship building, bridge building type dude. So get a guy that's a better defensive coordinator than him. I mean, the results for Dan Quinn being in charge of defenses ain't all that great, to be honest with you. It's bookended. There are a couple really seminal things that got him on this head coaching path with Seattle when they were unbelievable in yards, points, turnovers, you know how great the Legion of Boom was. Other than that, it's not a lot of impressive rankings, with the exception of some takeaways when he was the DC in Dallas. They're giving up yards and points, but at least there's something that you could say is a positive attribute. None of those things have traveled with him the two times he's been a head coach, right? The takeaways aren't there. The yards aren't there. The points aren't there. None of it has been any good. So you got to do something different than you've done before. Go get a badass. Again, I would throw every dollar at Jim Schwartz, for example, just to say, I know it's somebody, your boss is out in Cleveland. I know Schwartz will probably be a head coaching candidate, but that's not the trend line.
I doubt he'll get a job.
I wouldn't think so. Every dollar, all the commas, all the zeros, whatever he wants, he's my DC. As you said, so much is on the line right now. Your handpicked guys, two of them are gone, vapor, because you changed your mind and the results were terrible. You got to get it right.
800-636-1067. You want to hop in? We'll get to the calls in a second. I keep coming back to the fact that this feels like a very traditional defensive-minded coach butts heads with offensive coach over run-pass balance and some of those types of things. Very like Mike Zimmer in Minnesota, you know?
Mm-hmm.
How often do you see this? It's one of these old tripes. It's one of these old things where it's like you go defensive-minded, kind of old-school culture builder. You've got this newer thinker offensively, and the defensive-minded guy eventually just decides this is not how I want to
do it. It's one of the subplots of Any Given Sunday. They got that from real life. You know, it's obvious.
Let's go to CJ in New Jersey on the Fan. CJ, big news for the Commanders today. Cliff Kingsbury's out.
Yes. Hey, fellas. Calling in just to say, like, I know that Cliff is gone and next is Dan Quinn. When you think about it, we had Chris Moore, 32 years old, starting for Jaden Daniels, wide receiver one. That's malpractice, number one. Number two, how can you cook with these ingredients? I think that we have a bigger issue here in that no matter what OC we get, we need to be able to run the football. It might be an unpopular take. I believe we get Jeremiah Love. You get a transitional running back who can transcend the running game. You get a Ferrari. I'm tired of these punch and play guys. We should not have a 3 or 4 down running back. Get a bell cow. Give some relief to Jaden Daniels, and hopefully Josh Connerly can put on some more weight.
So this is actually an interesting point. People will hear this. I know, Danny, you will hear that, and you'll like hate everything about it,
yeah,
right? But let me just draw this link. If they really want to be this run and D team, okay? If they really want to be this run-dominant old-school football team, why don't they act like it in how they've built this thing? What did they do at left tackle? They went out and they got a white-collar, elite pass-blocking tackle who's decent in the run game. That's not what you do when you want to be a mauling team to go get the highest-paid left tackle in the league because of pass protection. Now, by the way, I love the move. I want Laremy Tunsil.
Yeah.
I'm paying Laremy Tunsil. But my point is, that doesn't really go with like this identity that you hired Cliff Kingsbury. That tells you you're not trying to be ground-and-pound a complimentary defense-led football team. Or else, what are you doing? You can't keep telling me about how you want to be the fit person who does all the right things, but then you eat fast food and
just
you don't work
cake,
out.
Yeah.
You know, if really it's true that they want to be this run-first, run-dominant team, why is your starting running back a 7th-round pick? Or, when it's not, it's a 6th-round pick from another regime that almost got cut this year and got cut a couple times.
Yeah, what happens, it looks like you changed your mind. It looks like the vision that you had for yourself all of a sudden went out the door. And again, the part that I care about, maybe other people don't, but I do. Kingsbury, according to their own videos, had some influence on a number of picks. Think Josh Connerly, for example. And I'm sure he was probably consulted when it came to Ben Sinnott. I'm sure he was probably consulted when it came to, I don't know, Jaden Daniels.
But if you do want to be that, Danny, then you should draft Jeremiah Love. Then you should sign a running back for $15 million a year. You should have been a player for Saquon Barkley. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, you're not acting like it. You shouldn't be spending big money on Deebo Samuel and Terry McLaurin or $28 million on Daron Payne and another $17 million on Javon Kinlaw or whatever.
Right.
Like, act like it.
But Sugar, I was going with that, though, just tangentially. There was a lot of influence for that guy in the building in terms of who was selected to fit that scheme, that design, that idea. They wouldn't trade it for Deebo Samuel, as a toy that would be perfect in this kind of offense, right? Their offseason actions, to your point, had nothing to do with this, if we believe it, this new design or this new paradigm that they wanted to implement. You've now wasted 2 years, basically, if that's the case. You want to go do something totally different. That's very Snyder-esque. That's very Bruce Allen, where it's like, you know what we need is quicker, smaller receivers after a year. We need bigger receivers, just sort of, running from one side to the other. you've wasted 2 years of an attempted build if that's really what you want to do.
Bob in Tennessee listening on the Odyssey app on Grant and Danny. What's up, Bob? How are you?
All right. How you guys doing?
Good, buddy.
Hi, Robert.
I don't know about you, but this kind of is exciting. I know it's bad on the one hand, but it got my interest. It's interesting. It's, you know, which is kind of what makes, you know. But here's the thing. I honestly believe it boils down to this. I don't know if they were, quote, looking for another OC or they didn't like Cliff. I think this is what I personally believe. It's an opinion that Quinn went to him and told him he wants certain changes. And that's about it. Like, and maybe he detailed what those changes were. My feeling is Cliff said, no, I will run my offense the way I run my offense. Kind of like that out of that movie, Few Good Men,
right.
Colonel Jessup. I don't know that for sure, but I suspect that's where the parting of the ways came.
Well, there's some element of that.
Something to that, yeah.
They had a meeting to go over their visions. Their visions are not copacetic. If you're desperate to keep your job, Cliff could just say, yeah, you got it. What do you want me to do? Well, do it. You want to be under center? Done. You want to be in the gun less? No problem. I don't think those are the issues, by the way. You want to run the ball more? I don't know how they could possibly want that. They ran it 60% of the time on first and 10, but whatever. Like, Cliff Kingsbury wants to run his offense. I always say this about Steve Spurrier back in the day. Spurrier gives over play calling duties to Hugh Jackson.
Hated it.
Steven Davis goes 26 for 105. They win the game. Steve Spurrier was miserable after the game. His whole point was, I want to see if my thing works in this level. Cliff Kingsbury wants to be Cliff Kingsbury. He doesn't want to be your version of Cliff Kingsbury. Kevin in Arlington, what's good?
Hey, guys. So, I want to step back for a sec, okay? Let's just look at all the hires. We go hire Adam Peters, consensus best opportunity there to get the GM that everybody wants, you know, the Princeton waiter. But that GM, to my knowledge, hasn't changed the head of college scouting or any of the college scouts. Then you hire Dan Quinn, who today is a 500 coach who got to a Super Bowl but gave up the biggest lead ever and lost with Hall of Fame capable quarterback in Matt Ryan. Okay, and that, you know, you've now got a situation where his choices, which, well, first of all, I wanted Vrabel. Then I was considering Harbaugh. I didn't want Quinn, but I got talked into it, okay? And then Quinn goes and he gets Kingsbury, who, to me, failed in Arizona and runs an offense that's fabulous for college but not necessarily the NFL. And then we didn't know what Joe Witt was. Well, now we do. Well, here we are 2 years later from the hiring of Adam Peters. We're without our coordinators. We have major reservations about Quinn, the culture builder. I mean, on the one hand, they didn't quit on him. Okay, fine. You want a culture builder? Go down to Bloomington and talk Kurt Cignetti and come in. That's a culture builder. Okay, I haven't seen this culture build. What I saw last year, if you're boiling it down, was the fantastic play of Jaden Daniels that certainly was enabled some by Cliff, et cetera. But that, in retrospect, look at how much Jaden Daniels was the reason we won 12 games as opposed to 6 games or fewer a year ago. And so that's kind of where I'm at. We're back at square one, boys. Tell me I'm wrong. What have I said that's wrong?
Cosign.
I didn't stop you.
Yeah.
I mean, we let you roll there for a reason. The problem is how quickly this all escalated from a year ago. And now, before they can make the number 7 pick, before they get to free agency, I really genuinely believe they have to hit these coordinating hires, and it's a bigger deal than who they take at 7. The biggest decision they'll make all offseason is OC. The second biggest is DC. And then the player stuff, I don't care where you rank it, it's somewhere thereafter, probably starting with either their biggest free agent splash money-wise or pick 7. We got those Caps tickets we're giving away in 20 minutes at 4 ahead of the Blitz. Our double play is next on G&D. Our double play is driven by your local Washington area Honda dealers. Now's the time for a great deal on a new Honda. Visit your local Washington area Honda dealer today. What stadium item did I eat at the Caps game last night that I almost never have? We'll play a little game.
Ooh.
What stadium item did I purchase at the Caps game last night to eat while watching the boys hang 7 goals on the Ducks?
Now, are you doing a head fake where you go, I almost never have this, and it's a chicken tender basket?
That's up to you. Danny, what did I eat last night at the Caps game?
Hot dog.
The bell will mean you're wrong.
Damn it.
I should also say, I did have a chicken tender basket.
See?
That was my dinner.
But that's not the thing you're talking about.
That's not the item I got late in the game to kind of tide myself over. Darius.
Did you have a stadium pretzel last night?
This was a very quick game. A soft pretzel. A warm.
Darius, good job.
Let's go.
Good answer.
Salted pretzel.
Every time it's good. Every time.
Why don't I eat that more?
Yeah.
You know what it was? My throat was hurting a little bit. And by the end of the show yesterday, I think it's actually holding up better today, if I could say this.
Yeah, I think so.
Might be the pretzel. But by the end of the show yesterday, I was in a weird place where I could barely talk. So I wasn't really cheering. I was like snapping and clapping when they scored goals, high-fiving strangers. But I was like walking the concourse to get some steps. And I thought, I'm a little hungry, but I don't need anything. And I was like, you know, I saw the girl taking the pretzels like off of the spinning device. Like they had to be hot. And they looked salty and a little buttery, and they looked amazing.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm like, I'll bet you that would feel silly. If hot tea is good for my throat, why wouldn't a nice warm pretzel be good for my throat?
I don't think that's like good, or I think it's a neutral for your throat, but still, it's
delicious.
You're
probably right, but in my mind, that's what I was thinking. I want to eat something warm, and so I got a warm pretzel. It's
so good.
Slapped.
It's so good.
Just hit the spot.
Salty carbs. My weakness. That's the old Achilles heel right there for old Fanny Mouye. That's delicious and perfect.
And the logic, you're right, as I think about it now, probably doesn't make a whole lot of sense.
It doesn't, but that's not important.
It's like when my buddy Bear, me and him went on a diet once. I've told you this story years ago. But he lived in King George. We went to we went out to Howard's for breakfast to like kick off our diet. And we were going to do some egg whites and do a couple things, right? And Bear's bit was he got this gigantic plate of bacon. And I'm telling you, it must have been 25 pieces of bacon stacked on his plate. And I'm like, what the hell are you doing?
He went full Ron Swanson from Parks and Rec.
This is like my idea. Every morning I'm going to eat a ton of bacon and it's like make it super salty. He's like putting a bunch of salt on top of the bacon.
Salting the bacon?
Yeah.
That's tough.
And he's like, it's going to make me sweat all day long. That was his big diet idea. Was it's like protein and salt, and it's going to make him sweat.
I think you can find that diet somewhere. Like somebody's probably espousing the virtues of the sweat bacon your bacon diet.
Yeah. I don't think it worked.
Now, sweaty bacon?
These days, Bear is skinny Bear. He's a skinny cub. I saw him recently. He's lost a lot of weight. I don't think it was the bacon diet that did it.
What if it was, by the way? He was just so innovative.
The bacon diet was like 20 years ago. Varying levels of success. But that same logic is, I'm going to get a warm pretzel for my throat.
Can you imagine an influencer, by the way, just like a super attractive, thin person with like 7,000 abs on Instagram being like, here's the best way to start your ketosis, all right? Get yourself some bacon, probably about 7 or 8 pounds. Pour about 1.5 grams of salt on each piece. Eat that. Watch the pounds shred off.
Speaking of Instagram, don't want to throw you under the bus, but I'm going to throw you under the bus.
Oh.
I was scrolling some reels, and this very attractive female popped up in my feed. I don't know why or what her deal was.
Okay.
But I think she's like either travels or she dances and like also does stuff out on a beach. And
dances?
Very occasionally is in like bikinis or like a sports bra, it seemed like, or something.
Huh.
And I'm like, who is this person? I click on it. You know who followed her?
Is it me?
Danny Rouye.
So you already, you covered.
Like, are you really, really interested in her traveling vlog?
Well, you covered a few of the possibilities. I follow people that are like in really good shape that give me how to be in shape ideas.
Right.
Exercise type ideas. You know, if she's a fitness person, like maybe goes to places I want to go.
I don't know that she's a fitness person.
Well, let's find out who it is. I'll tell you why I follow her.
Me? I'll bet I can tell you why you follow her.
Why?
I can tell you right now.
What do you think?
I can think of a couple of reasons why you follow her there, bud.
Oh.
You made a couple trips to Ireland. Maybe she traveled to Ireland and told you where to eat or something.
I have no idea. I've never been to Ireland, though.
It was just so funny because I'm like, who is this girl?
Who is this person?
And I click on it to look at her bio, staring right back at me, followed by humorous Danny. I thought he's really interested in what she's got to say.
Well, I mean, there's mediums for words. I don't have her Twitter profile, but like the Instagram type deal, absolutely.
It's time for Danny's double play.
Indeed. Cheating a little bit here because this is sports related, but it involves your school and my school. George Mason University is off to a rip-roaring start in basketball.
George Mason University.
They are 14-1. Their best start, I believe, either ever or close to ever. Who knows? Now, listen, respectfully, it's not as if they're playing you know, Duke and UNC and Kentucky every night, but for who they are, what they're doing.
They're whooping Loyola and Fordham and VCU and
they're handling
LaSalle's
business.
Asses.
Yeah, they are handling business. They're 14-1 to start the year. They're pretty good. They are, to me, have a chance to be a tournament team this year, which is really, really cool. But for Christmas, my pops asked me, what should I get for, you know, my kids, his grandkids? And I'm like, I don't want another clutter thing. I don't want another toy or deal that my kids will use for a little bit and then maybe cast aside or kind of a kitschy, breakable deal, etc. So I'm now in the, let's do some experiences. Let's do a thing. So we came up with the idea of going to a George Washington basketball game. And speaking of LaSalle, we went and had great seats. It was a blast. Watched them have a tight game with LaSalle that they all of a sudden went on a nice little run, won by 22 points. GW's pretty good this year. Probably not as good as Mason, but they got a big game at Dayton tonight for the A-10. Why am I talking about this? Here's the reason. As everything is getting so expensive with pro sports, with going to football games, with going to Cap One Arena, you know, as often as some folks do, there are three really good options, in my view, to just go pick up a game casually. Bender Arena on the campus of American University is a great place to go see a game. The Patriot Center, Eagle Bank, whatever it's called now,
Eagle Bank
at George Mason University is an awesome place to go see a game. I've done that with a bunch of teams that my kid plays on and a few different groups. It's easy to get in and out. So much fun. It's great. And the Smith Center at the George Washington University is a cozy little city arena, holds about 5,000 people, not a bad seat in the house. That's a great place to go see a game, and especially fun when the home side is good. And it turns out that, at least in GW's case, and especially Mason's case this year, that is a really good option for families and the like. It was really cool. After the game, I didn't even realize this was happening, but I took my 7-year-old to go to the restroom. And it just so happened to be right by where the players exit the court, and all of a sudden we're in line to get high fives from all the players.
That's cool.
And so he's sitting there, and he's high-fiving Rafael Castro, who had 26-14, you sleep, by the way, in the game. He's high-fiving guys that started and played really well, and he's thrilled. It was the greatest thing ever for him.
Rafael Castro's double-double? Went double-double on you?
Yeah, little 26-14. LaSalle knows his name.
That is a night, by the way.
Yeah, everybody got dunked on. The mascot, too. So that was a blast.
That's
and
awesome.
It was a cheap, affordable option, and it was great.
Mason's about to whoop up on GW a couple times.
They play MLK Day, and then February 13th. Yeah, Mason's legit good, I think.